This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. And you know, a lot of times on this program, we take you to a place in the greater Los Angeles area and tell you a story there. But today, we're going to go on a different kind of trip. A stroll down memory lane. Come along on this journey, a romantic trip that leads to memories of cravings denied and longings fulfilled, a journey that begins with this really yummy piece of coffee cake that one of our reporters brought into the office here at KCRW. Danielle Chiriguayo provided this cake. She is our tour guide on today's trip into the past. Danielle, welcome.
Howdy, Steve. So that coffee cake you ate was baked fresh at Marina Del Rey Middle School when I brought it in. And it was even still warm from the oven.
It was still warm. I can testify to that. It was delicious. It was baked at a middle school?
Indeed it was. All of the LAUSD kids, like me, know about this coffee cake. It's served all over LA in all the schools. And that particular piece of cake you ate was baked by Evelyn Gerges. She's the head lunch lady at Marina Del Rey Middle School. And she's kind of a big deal.
My last name now, Evelyn Coffee Cake. Anywhere. The kids know me as a coffee cake lady.
So she is the coffee cake connoisseur.
Oh, yeah. So here's what you need to know about her. Evelyn seems like the exact kind of person who'd be making your go-to comfort food.
These are ingredients. But how we make it, this is my secret. You want to know my secret?
What is it?
I make it from my love, because I love students. Oh. When you love, you know, to cook, you know, everything's coming the best.
Oh, I love that.
And Evelyn, she's been making this coffee cake nearly every day for the last 17 years, which kind of makes her relatively new to this job.
The first recipe that we have documented is from 1954.
That's Ivy Marks, and she's the senior nutritionist at LAUSD. And she says that those kids during the 1950s were living for the moment, at least nutrition-wise.
We weren't concerned, not so much, about obesity, about high blood pressure, and the nutrition standards weren't very strict, to be honest. The original coffee cake, the portion was much larger. It had perhaps 500 to 600 calories. Over 20 grams of fat, over 10 to 12 teaspoons of sugar, and it was delicious.
500 to 600 calories for a piece of coffee cake.
Just one piece.
Yeah. 20 grams of fat, 500 to 600 calories. I suspect they're not like that anymore.
Yeah, really not anymore. And today's recipe has like less than a quarter of the original amount of sugar. But Steve, it's still pretty yummy.
We still have been able to keep that flavor in, the nutmeg, the cinnamon, the right amount of sugar, the balance of all these ingredients make it delicious still. And to this day, it's one of the favorites.
She's really selling it, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
It was popular back in the 1950s. It's still popular today, though.
I would argue that this coffee cake is an old tradition here in Southern California, and it has this massive, massive fan club. And for at least one family that I met through the course of all of this reporting for this story, that coffee cake you ate, it changed their lives.
It changed their lives.
Yes, it did.
All right, let's go.
So here's the story. Like most nostalgia trips, it all started online while reflecting on the past and a particular brand of confectionery goodness. And that's when I come across a Facebook page called Mrs. Looney's LAUSD Coffee Cake. Its profile photo is a picture of coffee cake, and a cluster of red hearts has been photoshopped into its corner. It's an online-only business selling 9x9-inch pans for $20, 2 for $35, and they even deliver. You just call a 323 number listed on the page, and you get this guy.
In East LA, it was all part of our growing up. When you think about going to school back in, say, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, for us, there was coffee cake.
Eliseo Montoya. He's 100% an Angelino, a Chicano American. And he grew up across the street from Belvedere Middle School.
Literally across the street. Literally right across Brooklyn, was known then as Brooklyn. Now they changed the name to Cesar Chavez.
But the thing about Eliseo, he wasn't an LAUSD kid growing up. He was actually a Catholic schoolboy. But the LAUSD coffee cake holds a special place for him in his heart, all because of his mom. Some days growing up, she would send him across the street to buy some slices of coffee cake from what was then known as Belvedere Junior High, as a treat for the family.
There just came a time, I couldn't even tell you exactly when, to where she sent one of us before we went to school across the street to the public school, just walk through the gates and walk up to the cafeteria and buy some coffee cake. Within 5 minutes, we're sitting at home with some milk and having the old Alley USD coffee cake.
About 10 years ago, as Eliseo explains it, he was at a bit of a crossroads in his life, feeling nostalgic for his school days in a way that I can definitely understand.
I went looking again on Facebook, and I went looking for my first girlfriend from back in those days, because she lived down the street. She went to Belvedere herself.
He went looking for his old junior high flame. Back in the day, they had been neighbors, and they would see each other every day.
And so I got home a little early. Catholic school boys, we get out early. So I was there, and I saw her walking, and big old smile and everything just caught my eye, and we flirted, and she picked up on me. That's what I tell everybody. And so she picked up, and she flirted with me and winked at me, and I was just an innocent Catholic schoolboy.
One of the things he learned about his old junior high girlfriend, Sonia Fragoso, as they reconnected?
Ended up that she made LAUSD cake. She would just do it here or there for her and the kids, you know. And so I was like, wow, you know.
And between the coffee cake and the passage of time and the funny ways life has its ways of working out, Eliseo and Sonia ended up back together. They even got married. But they ended up running into some financial troubles.
So it got to be at this point a few years ago where things got really tough. No job, no work, eviction. Things got real serious.
They were looking for ways to make money.
So a friend of mine said, well, why don't you guys sell your coffee cake? And I was like, really? You really think people will buy it? Everybody loves it. Everybody talks about Sonia's, you know, Alley's USD coffee cake. So, all right, so I went on Facebook and took a picture of the coffee cake, and, you know, we didn't make a killing, but, you know, we were able to eat and help to pay rent and keep our head above water. We did that for a couple months, and it just, to the graciousness of our friends and their friends, that's how it got started. It was a life-saving moment for us.
This LAUSD coffee cake became a way for the Montoyas to help get a financial grip on their situation. These days, Eliseo works full-time as security in film and TV production, and the bake sales are something they have in their back pocket for whenever they need it.
We just do it a couple times, or, you know, not greedy, but, you know, make a couple little extra dollars for the holidays, keep our head above water and make sure that the kids got shoes and pants and have the little things they need to study hard and become good people. It's like giving my children another tool on how they can make money. If times ever get hard again, to me it's just as important as the people that come by right here and get cans from the trash cans and stuff. I did that myself too when the times were hard. Going around the street, just picking up cans, you know. Get $20 in a day, that means I can get almost 20 cheeseburgers for me and the whole family.
For a lot of Angelenos, this coffee cake is a warm memory, a nostalgic slice of goodness. But for Eliseo, it's clearly a lot more than that.
Because everything that I've experienced with this coffee cake has been love. It was love that she made it and she would make it for her children. It was love that my mom would say, hey, you know, I want to give you guys a treat, go across the street and get so many slices of coffee cake and bring it back. It was love that my friend suggested that we sell it and helped us to get it started. Each and every person has a smile, thank you.
LA is arguably one of the most sprawling and diverse places in the country, but sometimes it actually doesn't feel that big. In fact, if you grew up and went to public school here, you probably have something in common with me and with the millions of other Angelenos in this city. It's not a big thing, but it's sweet. It's crumbly. And it tastes like love. For KCRW, I'm Danielle Chiriguaya.
coming up, from crumbly to a crisis of homelessness on the streets of L.A., what the governor has to say about it and plans to do about it. That's next on Greater L.A. on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater L.A. on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Governor Gavin Newsom delivered his annual State of the State speech early this morning, a lot of it focusing on homelessness and a new statewide effort to help get more people housed.
Let's call it what it is. It's a disgrace that the richest state and the richest nation succeeding across so many sectors is falling so far behind to properly house, heal, and humanely treat so many of its own people.
Now, it's been a tough and growing problem all up and down California. Los Angeles County saw its homeless numbers bounce to almost 60,000 just in the last count. L.A. City represented more than 36,000 of those. And now the president is threatening to get involved.
If they can't do it themselves, we're going to do it. The federal government's going to take it over. We're going to do it.
And joining me now is Anita Chabrier. She's in Sacramento for the L.A. Times. Hi, Anita.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm all right. The governor spoke for quite a while. That's nothing new. He likes to talk. Homelessness was a big, obviously, focus of his State of the State today. Can you give us an overview of what he's proposing?
I can. You know, one of the things that came out of today that was interesting is that the entire speech was about homelessness. So in general, Gavin Newsom hasn't wanted to call out one issue as the state's top priority, but today he did that. And that is significant in that it means that that's what we're going to be doing in the legislature this session. That's really where the focus is going to be. He didn't come up with a ton of new ideas today. A lot of what he talked about, he's talked about in the last month or two, which is another $750 million that he would like to get funded very quickly through the legislature to do some immediate things on the street. You've seen his trailers go out to L.A. and a couple other places. You'd like to see more kind of immediate housing. He's talked a lot about accountability. That was a big topic today. What we're finding in the state is we've spent $1.5 billion on homelessness over the last couple years, but we really don't have a lot to show for it. And in a lot of cases, we don't know where that money exactly has been spent. And he really wants to see more accountability. And there's big talk about reforming mental health, our mental health laws, so that more people could be forced into treatment, out of homelessness and into treatment, instead of just being left on the street.
It's a lot of plans, Anita. How in sync is he with California lawmakers? Obviously, those plans have to get through with the legislature in Sacramento.
You know, today you're going to hear nothing but praise for the governor. He hit all the big ticket items in a very top line kind of way, and you're not going to hear any legislators today do anything other than stand with the governor that this is a state crisis. But in the coming weeks, I think you're going to see a lot of debate about exactly how those top line ideas play out in local communities. For example, with LA in particular, LA would like to see long-term, LA County and LA City would like to see sustainable funding, not one-time money, not one-year money going towards the problem, but ongoing funding. And actually, one of the assembly members from LA, Miguel Santiago, is going to put in a bill on Friday asking for $2 billion a year, ongoing money to address the problem.
$2
billion across the state, yeah.
What have we heard from, I mean, obviously it's only just about an hour since the governor stopped talking in Sacramento, but have we heard from Mayor Eric Garcetti or L.A. County supervisors about this? And how do you think the governor's approach will go down locally?
You know, I have not spoken to Garcetti or anyone down there, but I did see some tweets saying, you know, in general, very, very supportive of what the governor has said. The governor really today just planted a flag on the issue of homelessness that we're all going to gather around it this legislative session. And so I just today is not the day for dissent. Today is the day to, you know, celebrate that commitment to the issue. But like I said, I think in the future, especially around Garcetti, because Garcetti has been speaking with the Trump administration, with Ben Carson from HUD, sort of going off on his own path to possibly address homelessness in the city of L.A. through federal aid. And those are discussions that have not involved the state.
Well, the HUD Secretary Ben Carson was in L.A. last week. They announced this joint working group with the Trump administration. Any idea what the city might get from those negotiations?
You know, we would all like to know. That is a mystery, right?
They've been
very tight-lipped about that.
Yeah.
But in general, it's land and money of some sort, land and aid or land and access to services or medical care kind of things that the federal government could provide. The problem is, of course, what are the conditions that come with that?
I want to go back to what the governor had to say today. Let's hear a little bit about accountability.
Every homeless California living on the boulevard of broken dreams is a casualty of institutional failures. Person who's fallen through every possible hole in the safety net.
Institutional failures. I mean, a lot of this has to do with accountability. He wants to make sure that the money that the state is doling out is actually being used and is making a difference because, I mean, we've taxed ourselves in L.A. County and in the city of L.A. He's saying that if the locals aren't making it happen, then the state is going to step in. Is that what he's saying as far as accountability goes?
Yes and no. So
okay.
It's a big debate in the state. So what has happened is money usually goes to cities and counties, and they each have their own responsibility for what they do. For example, most kind of mental health services are county run, whereas emergency shelters might be opened by a city. They don't work unless both of those people are, unless the city and the county are working together. In places across the state, the cities and counties cannot agree. They simply, their board of supervisors and their mayors and their city council cannot all get on the same page. And the result has been that nothing gets done because they can't play nice with each other.
Well, people can get on the same page about the causes, though, right? About what's making this problem even worse.
You'd be surprised because
really?
we talk about housing and mental illness and things like that, but there are great divides in what people think should be done. So, you know, there are still many people who believe that drug addiction should perhaps not be treated so gently or be diverted from jail. That's just like one place where you see real big divisions that end up in gridlock.
Newsom, I know, created a statewide task force on homelessness that's headed by, as we know, L.A. County Supervisor Mark Ridley Thomas, Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg, who was in the Senate for so long. Does the governor have much to show for those efforts on this issue so far?
So the issue of accountability came out of the task force, which was led by Mark Ridley Thomas in L.A. and Mayor Daryl Steinberg of Sacramento. And they really honed in on that idea as local leaders that they needed to find a way to force cooperation when they couldn't get it from the people around them. So that has been, I think, the number one contribution of that statewide task force is really highlighting this issue of accountability and how do we get there.
Forcing, though.
Forcing.
Everyone loves to be forced to do something, right?
Well, the task force had actually recommended that the state be given the power to sue municipalities that don't do something. And Newsom has not embraced that idea. And you actually heard him say in his speech today he would like to use the carrot rather than the stick to get things done.
Well, it's certainly a tall order and something we're going to keep talking about. I want to thank you, Anita Chabrier, staff writer for the LA Times up in Sacramento. Anita, thanks.
Thank you.
Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis with a mini Los Angeles history lesson. Please turn your attention to the blackboard. I know this is radio, but work with me here. In 1781, Native American, African, and European settlers established a farming community in the heart of what we now know as downtown L.A. The Plaza Historic District, or El Pueblo Historical Monument, is the oldest section of the city where Los Angeles was born. And today, the area is home to one of the newest developments in the city, a walkway that connects the recently built mixed-use L.A. Plaza Village development and the Historic District. The latest portion of the walkway was unveiled this morning, and KCRW was there. Frances Anderton helms the Design and Architecture Desk here at KCRW. She's here with me right now off the heels of this morning's dedication ceremony. Hi, Frances.
Hello, Steve.
I want to know more. I saw pictures, by the way, of this walkway, and
it's actually charming.
It's beautiful, actually. I love the color. Tell us about it, and what does it connect?
So what this walkway does is it bisects several wide streets in downtown Los Angeles, starting at North Hill at the Fort Moore Pioneer Memorial. It then goes east across North Broadway, then across North Spring Street, and currently it lands at Main Street, taking you right to La Placita Church, which is the oldest church in Los Angeles, as well as La Plaza de Cultura y Artes, which is a museum settled right in a historic building in this district, which is one of the most historic areas in Los Angeles. Eventually, it will take you all the way to Olvera Street and Union Station. Now, it's just getting going. It's not yet fully buzzing, but the idea is that one bisects these super wide boulevards in downtown with a walkable narrow passageway, which is really how old cities were formed.
So then why are we talking about this little walkway? Obviously, it's going to take you places, but it's not a very big walkway. It's surface level, right?
The fact that it's not very big is exactly the point. If you go to charming historic cities, you will often find that the experience that you really enjoy is that little walkway that takes you past historic buildings, that takes you on mysterious little routes. To me, that's what this walkway is about. It's the opposite of trying to navigate across massive wide streets where the cars are bearing down on you. It takes you past public art that the developers of this walkway have installed. Let's hear from John Echeveste. He's the CEO of La Plaza de Cultura y Artes, which is one of the co-creators of this walkway.
The walkway is also serving as a space for us to display major art installations. And we also just recently installed a section of the Berlin Wall. So we get a lot of people now, I notice, who are just stopping to see that, and that brings them into the walkway.
And you just heard him mention the Berlin Wall. That was one of the more surprising elements of what I saw this morning, which is there's a chunk 14 feet high of the Berlin Wall, and on it is a letter. It's addressed to President Trump. And this wall has been traveling the country since November when it was brought in to mark the fall of the Berlin Wall 30 years ago. The people that transported it here tried to get it to the White House. Needless to say, it was rejected. But now it's going to stay in perpetuity at the entrance to this walkway. And I spoke with Marcus Klein, who helmed the project to bring this piece of wall here.
First and foremost, it's a letter celebrating the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, and it's a letter that that thanks the United States for its role in bringing down the wall. But it is also a reminder, as the letter itself says, that no wall lasts forever.
Francis, talking about this walkway, who's developing it? Who are the people behind it?
It's amazing how many people came together to create a walkway. La Plaza de Cultura y Artes, you just heard from John Echeveste, that's a non-profit museum. The County of Los Angeles, which owns part of the land, a developer's named Trammell Crowe, a California Natural Resource Agency. So a lot of people came together to create a little urban passage.
We talked last year about La Plaza Village. This is this mixed-use development that, as you put it, tried to sew the ruptured and concrete part of El Pueblo back together. How does this walkway fit into that, like, overall plan?
Well, the walkway carries on right through it. The walkway goes, as I say, from La Placita Church, and then it carries on across the road, and then it goes into the development. Coming up in the spring will be the opening of stores within this development along this paseo. But they are attempting to stimulate that kind of use of the city. So La Plaza Village consists of something like 350 living spaces, as well as stores, and all of which are centered on the walkway.
When I hear the word development in
yes.
Los Angeles, I think of unaffordable housing.
Well, yes. And even
right?
the affordable housing in this development is somewhat unaffordable. There is 20% affordable set aside, but the reality is these studio apartments that are called affordable are going at around $2,000, and every single one of them has been taken.
Gobbled up.
And we should say there's a lot of people without homes in this area. So one does get a very stark demonstration of the challenges that we have in Los Angeles in terms of housing.
Something that we talked about on this show today, as a matter of fact. KCRW's Francis Anderton from the Design and Architecture Desk. Francis, thank you.
You're very welcome, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, sex education for a new generation. But how much education is too much? We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast. Share your thoughts with us. Jenna Cagle, Danielle Chiriguayo, Rebecca Mooney, Sonia Geis, Amy Thaw, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Christine Comito, and Christian Bordall make this show happen. I'm Steve Chiatakis, thanking you for your ears and for your time. Have a great day.